So arriving at the scene at about 5 p.m. the following day, wearing biohazard suits, the Americans arrived from Fort Bliss on the helicopters. So according to the story, the soldiers took over the UFO. They attached it using cables to the cargo helicopter, and they took it away back into Texas. The soldiers that were left behind, the soldiers that had come in on the Hueys, they assembled all the remaining wreckage, including the parts of the small plane, the bodies and everything, and they exploded it. They exploded all the remaining evidence using either some kind of very high-grade explosive or a low-yield thermonuclear device, such as a suitcase nuke. And so the UFO was removed, and the explosion ensued. Now, what I talked about the new witnesses. When we announced that the UFO conference was happening in Presidio, and I was working with Brad Newton and Charlie Angel and several other folks in the area to organize it and to plan for it, we had suddenly come forward some residents of the Rio Dosa Candelaria area in 1974, which is Mrs. Johnny Chambers, a longtime teacher, taught for about 40 years, very well respected, has been honored by the state of Texas for her service as a teacher in a one-room schoolhouse for many years. She's well known. If you mention the name Mrs. Chambers, you know, everybody in that area knows her and her son, John. So she came forward when she heard about the UFO festival, and she said she saw that big explosion right across from Candelaria on the Mexican side in 1974. And this is what she told us. It was just a big explosion in the sky, mostly round. I can see it in my mind, but it's hard to describe. I would say the width of it was about 4 or 5 miles. And, of course, it was up pretty high in the sky. And her son said, all of a sudden, a big old glow, fireball-looking thing, appeared over the mountain over there. We stopped and watched it for a while. It was quite a fireball. By the way, it made quite an impression on him. He was only 10 years old in 1974. So here's Presidio down here. Here is Rio Dosa, here's Candelaria, and this is where the Chambers, Mr. Chambers, Mrs. Chambers and her son John were coming down the mountain, and their car was kind of pointed toward Mexico, and this is the area where they saw the explosion. And what's so interesting is we had this Mexico's Roswell case, and we had witnesses from the Mexican side, but we had never had a witness from the Texas side. They had never heard about it, and when they heard that the UFO festival was going to happen in Presidio and that it was kind of inspired by the Mexico's Roswell case, suddenly they made the connections in their mind, and they told us, we saw that. We saw that in 1974. So here's the mountain range that runs right along the Rio Grande River. Here's where the witnesses were standing and looking this way. They saw a 4.5 mile wide fireball over the mountains in Mexico. And this is, again, courtesy of Brad. He went down there to the place where they were standing on that day looking into Mexico, and he took this picture. And John Chambers, who was one of the witnesses, pointed out to him exactly where he saw the explosion rising up over these mountains. So what I did was I played around with Photoshop. Anybody ever done that? It's fun to play with. I put an explosion from one of the nuclear tests that the U.S. did in the 50s or 60s, and I Photoshopped it in with the actual mountain range in the background. And I'll never forget, on the day of the UFO conference in Presidio, we showed this picture to Mrs. Chambers, and her mouth dropped open, and she pointed, and she said, that's exactly what I saw. How did you get that? And so I explained to her what I had done, and she thought that it was remarkable, that we were able, and I did it strictly based on what they were describing. The only thing I should mention is that their sighting of this was at night. So they didn't see so much the clouds that you could see in this daytime nuclear test, but rather saw the glow of it, as John will explain in a minute. We watched it all the way down the mountain, I imagine at least 5 or maybe 10 minutes more. We didn't keep driving at a regular speed. We slowed down and kept watching it. And then he describes a little bit about the colors, blazing red, fire red, had a little orange in it. But what I want to do is show you an interview that we just did with John Chambers 2 weeks ago when we were at the UFO Festival. And Brad set this up for us. We went out to the place where you can see the mountains in the background, and John is talking. Now, I want to just caution you that it was a very windy day, and the camera was picking up a lot of wind noise, and I apologize for that. But I think you'll get the general gist of what he told us that day. You know, basically what John is, he was describing the colors in it, and he said that it was spread out over that whole mountain that you see there in the background. So it was really a neat experience for Brad and the rest of us who were there listening to John describe exactly what he saw on that day when this incredible sight filled the sky in front of him. So let me go back to the PowerPoint. Now, here's some interesting descriptions that John and his mom both said. They said that at first they thought it was a fire, and they had seen fires in the area before, but this was a different kind of glow. And you notice that he said it had colors layered upon colors. It was different from just a fire glow or anything like that. It was kind of like the sun going down, except the sun had already gone down. So it was almost like the sun coming back up. Well, what's interesting to me is I've read a lot of books about the atomic testing that we did in the 50s and 60s. And one of the most common descriptions of the fireball going up is witnesses described it as the sun coming up, the sun coming back up. Sometimes there was language used like there were two sunrises that day to describe the impact of the nuclear explosion. So to us, it is evident that what Mrs. Chambers and her son saw in 1974 looking into the mountains of Mexico, they saw the explosion that was set off to cauterize or sanitize the area of this UFO incident. It seemed to be on the other side of the mountain, and it came up over the top of the mountain, according to Mrs. Chambers. So after the recovery, the U.S. team came back across the Rio Grande River near Candelaria before continuing east. Now, here's another thing that just shocked us when we talked to John. He said that within a day after he saw the strange glow in the sky, it could have been the same day, several area residents observed a group of military helicopters moving back into the U.S. from Mexico, including one large twin-rotor helicopter. It was several, maybe 3 or 4, he said. So now we have the other important piece of the eyewitnesses on the Texas side. For the first time, somebody that saw the military aircraft coming back from Mexico. People up at Candelaria said they saw them. In those days, there just wasn't a whole lot of flying going on. They said they saw these helicopters. I don't think they were real close to the town because some of the people lived on ranches away from town. And that actually is corroborated in the story, which supposedly the crossover into Mexico and the return from Mexico occurred north of Candelaria. So they did see our military helicopters coming back out of Mexico. It was somewhere in that same time frame as the sighting of the fireball, like maybe the next day, or it could have been that same day. So just to kind of wrap up what happened after the recovery, the U.S. team is supposedly moved the disc, which had been taken out in that cargo helicopter, to the Davis Mountains. There's actually a lot of federal land in the Davis Mountains, right around the McDonald Observatory. There are federal lands owned by the U.S. government. So supposedly the U.S. team moved the disc there where they hid it overnight, and then it was picked up by a truck convoy which drove it first to Atlanta, we think to the Centers for Disease Control, which was the world's leading laboratory in the 70s for analyzing, you know, biological hazards. And obviously there was something that caused the death of all those soldiers that could be analyzed there. And then eventually, of course, it was moved elsewhere to a location that is unknown to us. So as I mentioned previously, we've been down, and I just wanted to show you that Coyame actually consists of this whole big municipio here. And right here is where it comes real close to the Texas border. And then that's, you know, where the incident happened. In this huge amount of land, there's only 1,400 people. So even though it's 5,000 square miles, very sparsely populated. So just to give you some of the imagery that's out there. And that basically gives you the gist of the story. We've been down there. We investigated several interesting sites. We recovered some wreckage from a crashed plane that we showed on the History Channel's UFO Hunters show. We don't know if that was the actual plane, although it is a plane. It's been verified to have been a plane from the era of the 1970s. We don't know if it is the actual plane. When the pieces from that were submitted by the History Channel to a lab in California for analysis, they found trace materials on it that could not be identified by the spectrographic equipment that they used. You know, the basic elements, the basic materials were all Earth, known Earth elements, but there was some other stuff in there that could not be identified. So we don't know if the crashed remains of the plane that we found in the desert in Coyame is the actual plane that crashed with the UFO. That has not, you know, it's impossible for us to say. We don't have anything linking that precisely, but it was interesting to find in approximately the place where we thought it should be, we found the wreckage of this plane. I'm going to have Brad come up and talk a little bit about the experience we had with the Presidio UFO Festival, Brad. And then we'll probably have time for just a few questions, and then we've got to clear the way for supper. Brad Newton from the city of Presidio.
Hello, and thank you. It's a pleasure to be in Laredo. You know, I found Noe by accident. I'd heard a rumor last spring about a UFO festival. Or not a UFO festival, but a UFO crash over across the river from us. And so I got on the internet, as we all do, and looked up UFO Presidio in 1974. And that's how I found Noe. And I emailed him, and he emailed me right back. And that was the birth of the Border Zone International UFO Festival. And there seems to be a real coincidence that there's all these crashes along the border. So we called it Border Zone. I was very happy with the first year's attendance. You know, it was in the San Antonio paper where back in 1995, Roswell had this crazy idea about having a festival, and they had about 200 people show up. So we did every bit as good as that, and of course, we've got a great story here that's we're just starting to get to, I guess, the meat of the witnesses that are out there. Obviously, like the Chambers, that because we had this festival that said, "Hey, we saw something," and we've kind of put two and two together, and they have too. The next thing that we're looking for is some of the people that lived in the Ruidosa, Candelaria area that saw the helicopters. We know that they're out there, but, you know, as time goes by, people move off and everything. So as you discuss this with folks, networking is everything. And And who knows? These people have moved to you know, the four winds, and you may know one of them. So if you do run across somebody, so they, I grew up there, I live there, and they recall anything about this, the helicopters coming out, we'd love to talk to them. So anyway, just a little bit about the Big Bend area. How many of y'all ever been to the Big Bend? Okay, well, there's it's time for y'all to come back, and of course, bring these other folks with you. The Big Bend is a wonderful place. It is a destination. You got to be going there to get there. And but it's well worth the trip. We have you know, the Rio Grande and three major canyons that you can do a float trip through. We have the Big Bend Ranch State Park. It's over 400 square miles where you can camp out and not hear the guy next to you snoring. Or the kids partying, you know, the campsites are spread way out. And it takes a little while to get there. Whenever you leave the pavement, it takes an hour and a half to get to the headquarters. Like I say, it's 400 square miles, and you can certainly see the night skies as the Lord intended them to be without a lot of light pollution. So, like I say, it's just a great place to go. And, this time of year, from about October through, I would say, April, there's near perfect weather. So wintertime camping is very nice. During the springtime, starting about March, we have the giant variety of bluebonnets that bloom down there. You know, in most of Texas, the bluebonnets are about this tall. Down in the Big Bend, they're this tall. And so that's really something to see. Once again, about the park, they have a lot of mountain biking trails. You can take Jeep trips, and there's plenty of outfitters down there. My card's out at the table, as well as some T-shirts. And on the back of it, we have our website, UFOBorderZone.com. And there is a ton of material that it would take all day for us to sit here and tell you what all's on there, but a lot of the videos that Noe and Ruben shot on their investigations are on there, along with a lot of archive stuff. So you can really dig deep into this website, see the History Channel stuff on there, and a whole lot more newspaper articles, there are radio interviews of what all happened. And one of the things I'm most proud of, and thanks to Jerry Pippin and Norrie's show and George Norrie and all the rest of them, is we got a lot of great publicity for the Presidio and the Big Bend area through these shows, and had over 500,000 listeners. So that is huge for any city. And we really appreciate Noe and Ruben and all y'all's efforts. Thank you very much. And you know, it's kind of funny the way you make friends. I just happened to come in on a UFO. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Does anyone have questions about the Mexico Roswell case? We have time for just a couple. Yes, sir. Okay. The first part of your question, where did this come from? It came from a leaked U.S. government document. Someone in the intelligence community put it out on an old BBS network in the early 1990s. This was before internet, folks. We used to use dial-up modems, and you hear the screeching sound, and you'd connect, and you'd be going at, you know, a blazing 56 kilobits per second. So anyway, they posted information that was apparently leaked. Now, these folks who have access to these classified documents, they can't take anything with them at the end of the day when their shift ends. So when they get home, they have to write it down from memory. So we have documents about this case that were taken out and then were posted to the BBS service, which was a precursor of the internet, under the code name Deneb, D-E-N-E-B. Now, for those of you who know your astronomy, Deneb is a very famous star, one of the brightest stars that we can see from Earth. And the group that was working on these UFO investigations from within the U.S. government, according to MIT graduate and longtime UFO advocate Elaine Douglas, it was a group of individuals within the U.S. government who saw this information cross their desks, and they couldn't take any of the documents with them or risk being imprisoned forever or possibly shot, but they could take it with them in their minds. The second part of your question is, we know from the witnesses that we've talked to both on the Mexican side and the U.S. that something significant did happen in this area at this time. There were witnesses on the Mexican side, ranchers who saw and felt explosion. And we heard from the chambers, several people on the U.S. side who witnessed it. So we had this leaked document, and then we have some witnesses who say something went down. There was military activity. There were helicopters coming back from Mexico back to the U.S. So we're kind of putting the pieces together. Was that basically? Okay, the Mexican government is the third part of this. We've been working with our UFO research colleagues in Mexico. Ruben is the liaison between MUFON, a mutual UFO network, and the organizations in Mexico that do research on UFOs. So we've been working with them since 2006. And we don't know if perhaps one of them may have put that information into Wikipedia. We're still trying to figure that out. But what they tell us is that we think that the U.S. government, like Stanton Friedman was saying earlier, the U.S. government does not release, detailed information if somebody gets killed in an encounter with a UFO, a pilot is killed. The families are just told that there was, an accident or a training mission. They're not given the specifics. Well, the same thing in Mexico. It's even more so that the families of the soldiers who died out in the desert probably were just told, most of them come from poor, low-income families in the southern part of Mexico. They were probably just told that the soldiers had died in a training accident somewhere, and they were not given any details. However, the UFO researchers in Mexico are still digging into that, especially now that we have some names and what appear to be Mexican military serial numbers. We're hoping, which we've only known for about 2 months, we're hoping that Gilberto Rivera from Chihuahua and some of the other researchers from Mexico can get us some information. They know some of the former military officers who were working in the Mexican military in the 70s, so we're hopeful. One more question. Yes, ma'am. All of the information about the small plane has been expunged from all records. We don't know, if this was deliberate or if it was lost over time, because as I mentioned, this case did not come to light until 20-some years after it happened, 20 years or so. So the only thing we know is that it was a small plane, like something like a Cessna, and that it was of Mexican registry. We don't know if there was anything other than just the pilot, if he could have had occupants. The Mexican UFO researchers say that there's a possibility the plane and its occupants were involved in some kind of illegal activity, and so they were kind of trying to fly low under the radar, so to speak, and not draw too much attention to themselves. And this was in the era before 9/11. There wasn't as much focus on air traffic going back and forth between the border of U.S. and Mexico. And do we have time for one more question? One last question. Anyone? Over here. Yes, ma'am. What happened with the Mexicans is the Mexican military in 1974, and I don't think even today, is prepared to handle what goes on at one of these sites. I mean, we have had former soldiers who are now retired who took part in crash retrieval scenarios such as this. When you enter a scenario like this, there's a possibility of radiation. There's a possibility of exposure to some kind of toxic, biohazards of all kinds. And the Mexican military did not have the technology to protect themselves from that. They went out to the scene in the desert thinking they had a small plane crash, and they were just going to deal with that. It wasn't until later that they discovered, hey, there's something more to this. And when the U.S. arrived, they were in fully equipped hazmat gear. They had all the protection. This was a team of specialists who are on call for emergencies such as this. And that was the difference between the two. Thank you very much. You've been a great audience. Unfortunately, I am sold out of the book Mexico's Roswell. I have other of my books up at the table at the front, and you can get Mexico's Roswell from my Amazon authors page, amazon.com. Thank you very much.